100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the studio for 19 or long, so me say.
Hey, Digital Sister back. Thanks so much for continuing to tune in to the podcast. My big fan base in Denver, thank you. I'm excited that it continues to grow. I even had a download in Santiago, Chile, which is very exciting. So the podcast keeps growing, and thank you for tuning in to hear some interesting reflections and commentary about a lot of interesting things going on in the news. Well, I'm going to lighten up a little bit on this podcast because I was a little heavy the last podcast, kind of political, but there's so much stuff going on that we have to talk about. But I'm going to lighten it up a little bit tonight, and hopefully, you know, that will be good because, you know, in a couple of podcasts, I'm going to be all revved up again and just going off. But in any event, we're just going to have, you know, some nice conversation tonight, talk about some of the things that are going on. Can you believe that Janet Jackson is celebrating 20 years in the business? I mean, it's been a little bit longer than that, but at least 20 years of making some seriously great music. It was last week, as a matter of fact, with her new release of her new album, 20YO. She's been all over Tom Joyner. She's been everywhere. She looks great on the cover of Vibe. And she's 40 years old. It's hard to imagine that she's 40 years old because I think we all grew up on Janet Jackson music. But I still remember Control when that came out in 1986 and how hot it was. And they were playing it on the radio, and it still sounds hot. You still get up and dance around when you hear that. I mean, she laid it out. And just think about all of the hits that she had from that. I mean, What Have You Done For Me Lately, Nasty, Control, you know, Let's Wait a While, Pleasure Principle. So she had several big hits that we all loved and jammed to just from that one CD. And let's not forget Rhythm Nation when that came out in 1989. Miss You So Much, that was a big hit. And Escapade, remember that? That was kind of neat too. She also had some big hits from, remember That's the Way Love Goes from Janet, 1993. Anytime, Anyplace, 1994, Janet. And I Get So Lonely, The Velvet Rope. I mean, she just has a great catalog of music. Now, I have to say, I'm not, I've heard a couple of cuts from the new 120YO, and I know she's got to stay, you know, current and kind of, I think I've talked about this in the previous podcast, but she's got to kind of partner with some of the hip hop, you know, stars of today. But I don't know, Janet, just get back together with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and just crank out some good dance music and just put out some good music that you did before. I don't really like the pairing with Nelly. I don't like some of the other cuts, too. It's just too whispery and whiny. But I know she has to stay current, and, you know, maybe I'm being a little old school, but I like the Control era. I like the Rhythm Nation era. I like the Janet era where there was good music, good dance tunes, because that's what Janet's known for. She's not known for this little Victoria's Secret, you know, I'm just getting in the bed kind of song. You know, that's not her style. She's a dance person, and that's what I hope that they will eventually get back to with some future CDs. But hey, we love you, Janet. We are so glad you're still putting out good music, you know, and we are just happy you're still cranking it out, because Janet jams. But anyway, just stop for a moment and think about where were you when you first heard some of those cuts. You know, it's an interesting proposition. And think about it. She is in that class of artists that has longevity, you know, 20 years, 30 years, something like that. I mean, look at LL Cool J. He's been around for almost 30 years making music, you know. So these are people that have longevity, and they're still able to put out good music and stay current. So kudos to Janet. We love you, girl. We just love you. Now, check this out. There's going to be a new hip-hop magazine coming out called Hip Hop Weekly. And it has a very interesting start because the founders, David Mays and Ray Benzino Scott, were the founders of Source Magazine, but they were fired last month in January. Sorry, they were fired back in January. From the magazine that they founded. Isn't that something? And they've teamed up with the fired editor-in-chief from Vibe magazine, Mimi Valdez, to create a new Hip Hop Weekly. It's going to be a new entertainment news and celebrity lifestyle publication, which is set to launch on October 16th. It's also going to feature a weekly column by the New York radio personality star. He's the former DJ from Power 105 that was fired from Clear Channel after he said some really kind of creepy things, and really it came down to a verbal assault on a rival DJ and talking about what he was going to do to that DJ's young daughter. So he was fired from that over the summer. There was a case, and I think he tried to sue and all that, but apparently he didn't get back because now he's getting involved with this new venture. But in any event, they're looking forward to that. Oh, yeah, and Wendy Williams is going to also contribute, you know, gossip and just kind of the insight entertainment stuff that we like to read about, the dirt, basically. So they're going to be starting this new magazine. So I think that'll be interesting to see what happens because the Source is still happening. It's still going on. You've got Vibe. You've got XXL. I mean, those are like the three main ones. And now we've got Hip Hop Weekly, which will be coming out. So I look forward to checking that out. And when I find a copy of it, I will be sure to talk about it with you so we can, you know, keep the dialogue going about what's happening in the world of hip-hop. Now, speaking of that, as I talked about many, many times in other podcasts, how hip-hop is beginning to become more mainstream, you're beginning to see more and more articles about particular artists or just hip-hop in general in USA Today. Well, as a matter of fact, in yesterday's issue of USA Today, there's a nice article about Ludacris, a.k.a. Chris Bridges. He's talking about how he enjoys acting, and he's gotten some notoriety from being in Crash, and he's been in a couple of other films also. Let's see, he's been in TV Too. The other film was Too Fast, Too Furious. He's been in Law & Order, Special Victims Unit. But he talked about how he... yes, he's getting some roles in acting, but he still is very much a musician and a hip-hop artist, and that's what he wants to concentrate on. But it's very interesting that, you know, they're giving a whole lot of, you know, a nice column to him talking about what he's been doing and what he's looking forward to doing, and that he has a song on one of his new CDs is called War with God, which he really kind of takes to issue rappers who challenge his credibility by touting their own criminal credentials. And it was very interesting that in this article, they say, and Ludacris, who has never been jailed, he's probably one of the few who hasn't been, but he put this album together, and one of the songs is called Do Your Time, and it features rappers Beanie Siegel, Pimp C, and C Murder, all of whom have just recently gotten out of prison in the last year. So we had all those guys on. But anyway, getting back to War with God, he talks about how, you know, he's kind of pissed off that other rappers are kind of throwing it in his face that they have more street cred because they have criminal credentials. But, you know, he's not getting too upset about that, but at least he's speaking out about it. He's very busy because he has a radio show on XM Channel 66. He's also the CEO of the Def Jam distributed Disturbing the Peace Records, which he has founded. He's got a couple of artists on that, Bobby Valentino being one of them. And like I said, he's been in a couple of other films and things like that. And what he's decided to do is he said he's going to continue to make good choices in the film roles that he takes because he doesn't want to take the usual roles that rappers are offered, which is usually they're criminals, they're thugs, and all that. So I think he's going to be interesting because he's going to keep a nice balance between acting and doing his music. So kudos to Ludacris for getting a nice shout-out in USA Today. I think that's very cool. And again, it speaks to how mainstream hip-hop is becoming and how some of the hip-hop artists are becoming very well known because they are being featured in mainstream media. Well, looks like Minister Louis Farrakhan is pretty ill. And I tend to wonder if the cancer, the prostate cancer that he was battling maybe 2 or 3 years ago has recurred. And that might be the issue. They said he's dropped, 20 pounds, and he's even talking about the movement that it will live long after, we have gone. So I think he's probably coming to terms with his own mortality. And, I don't agree with everything he says because he's very charismatic. But he has some good points, and he does care about his community. That being said, I hope that, he gets well. Or if he doesn't get well, I hope that he at least will find peace and, find some peace with whatever has to come about. But, what's going to be interesting is if he, in fact, is gravely ill and has to step down at some point, I wonder who will take over because as often as is the case when you have a very strong, charismatic leader who has really been the leader of an organization for, let's say, 30-plus years, very often, sometimes those leaders don't do a good job at planning for succession, training someone younger who has come up the ranks, who will eventually take over. Sometimes the ego gets in the way, and those people who have been in that position for a long time, tend to think they're going to be around a long time. And when some kind of illness comes about or some other kind of situation that causes a change, then they're confronted with what will happen. So it's going to be interesting, I think, over the next few months, even the next year or so, to see what happens within the Nation of Islam, who in fact will be the hand-picked successor to Minister Farrakhan, and what will happen to the organization. Will it split and splinter into other groups like it did when the founder Elijah Muhammad passed away? His son Wallace D. Muhammad started a more sort of traditional branch of Islam, and then Louis Farrakhan, who was Louis X at the time, took over and, took over and grew the Nation of Islam. So it's going to be very interesting, to see what happens, who takes over. Will there be a split in the organization? Will there be power struggle? It'll just be interesting to see what happens. So we wish him well, and we hope that he gets better. And if not, we hope that the prayers that people send out will comfort him and his family. Now, check this out. In this day and age, I thought it was pretty interesting that a University of Georgia professor, he's a doctoral student, his name is Matthew Harrison, did a research paper, and basically it was an unprecedented study, which indicated, and it's something that people of color know all too well, but it was interesting that he put some academics behind it and really showed in a study that dark-skinned blacks face a distinct disadvantage when applying for jobs, even if the resumes are superior to lighter-skinned black applicants. Now, that's pretty scary in this day and age that skin color is still playing a big factor, and really has a factor in determining whether or not you may or may not become employed in certain situations. You know, it's really not a surprise, but in some ways it really just reinforces that it really makes a difference at the time of employment. And then there was another study that I thought was very interesting. It was done at the University of Minnesota, and it was something to deal with what whites think about their own race. It was done with a telephone survey of more than 2,000 households nationwide, and what they kind of found out was some of the results were that among whites, their own racial identity is very important to them, and that they also realize the privilege that comes with being white, that it's very real, that they understand that they are in a privileged situation because of their skin color in this country. Very interesting also that racial identity is very important to them, but what they found out was that Southerners and social conservatives place even more emphasis on their racial identity than just, say, other white Americans in other parts of the country. So I thought that was very interesting, too. And they indicated that Republican and male respondents most strongly resist claims that discrimination in legal and financial systems can explain white advantage. So basically, that's kind of saying that they believe very strongly in the importance of individual effort, hard work, family upbringing, and achieving success. They just kind of ignore the fact that race has anything to do with that, which, you know, in some degree is kind of naive, but because I'm not Caucasian and I don't experience white privilege, I, you know, I can only kind of say understand how they feel. I don't live that. So, but again, it's a very interesting study about skin tone in this day and age, that it still does make a difference. Now, on that vein, I happened to come across a wonderful 7-minute film called A Girl Like Me by 16-year-old Keri Davis, something out of the Urban Academy, and it's from UTH TV. And she did a great 7-minute film about exploring the standards of beauty that are imposed on young black children and the damage that it does to their self-esteem and self-image. It's very, very good. It was a very good film. And it really showed how today, and there was a professor who did a study on this back in the 1940s where he placed you know, black dolls and white dolls, and asked the black children to pick up or choose the doll that they preferred. And, you know, pretty much every time a child picked up a doll, they always preferred the white doll. And this was done back in the 40s, late 40s. And here it is, 2006, almost 2007, and what filmmaker Keri Davis has shown is that it's still there. You had some young black kids who, you know, had their cornrows, a wide range of them, and had some dolls laid down before them, and they were asked to select which one they liked or which one they thought was smarter or which one they thought was prettier. And pretty much all the time, all those little black kids picked up white dolls. And I thought, man, it just kind of blew me away that that's still happening. And it shows you how ingrained the damage to the self-esteem and self-image is at such a young age. So somewhere along the line, these 7, 8, 9 year olds have already internalized that light and white is better, is prettier, is smarter. And so what's going to happen is, and I should say fairly that there are about maybe, I don't remember the total number of the students there, but let's say there were 10 kids who were in this example of the study. I would say about 3 of them selected black dolls. So that let me know that they are, you know, pretty secure in their identity and that their self-esteem is probably pretty good, and it can only get better because they're recognizing and seeing the beauty in dolls that look like them. But let's say the other 7 are going to have probably some issues and will probably have to deal with some things along the way. But, you know, it's just very interesting in this day and age that skin color is still an issue. And if you ever have a chance to check out this film, please do. It's very good and just very insightful that this 16-year-old put together some other 16-year-olds, and we get to hear what they think and how they feel and what they think about that. So it's very cool. So you may want to check it out. It's www.utshharveytv.com. /umedia/show/2052/. So yeah, check it out. I think you know, it's a great film that a 16-year-old did, very insightful. But if you happen to be a person of color checking out the podcast and you have some nieces and nephews or some kids that you work with, see if you can get a copy of this and play it for them and then have a discussion with the kids to help them understand, you know, what they saw and what they are internalizing, and just help them cope a little bit better so their self-esteem won't be so warped when they get older. Now, check this out. Charles Barkley, yes, the ex-basketball star, ex-NBA star, is thinking about running for governor in Alabama. Now, he can't run until 2014 because there is a residency requirement where they have to live in that place for 7 years. So he said he's looking for a house. He's thinking about running as an independent. He's not happy with the Republicans. He's not so happy with the Democrats either. He did talk about the fact that, you know, the issues with Katrina and what that showed. And he's also very verbal about the fact that he sees, you know, America discriminates against the poor, and it's becoming more of a class issue now with economic issues. And the reality is, if you're a person of color and you're poor, and even if you're white, your chances are going to be great that you're going to be living in, let's say, I don't want to say bad neighborhood, because they're not bad neighborhoods, but you're going to live probably in a very urbanized neighborhood. And you may be going to schools that are inferior to some of the schools in the suburbs. And he feels that's not right, and that's going to be one of the platforms that he's going to be talking about. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see if he, in fact, does that. And, hey, I say kudos to him, because we need more voices and different types of voices in the political landscape to deal with some of the issues that are going on. Now, poor Arnold Schwarzenegger. I like Arnold. I think Arnold's kind of cool. But, you know, again, it gets to how when you're in public life and you're speaking, you have to be very careful about what you say. Apparently, he was in a meeting, kind of a closed door type of thing. And, you know, he let out some comments about black blood and some stereotypes to describe blacks and Latinos. And this is what he said. He said, I mean, Cuban, Puerto Rican, I quote, they are all very hot, the governor says on the recording. They have the, you know, part of the black blood in them and part of the Latino blood in them that together makes it like that. And, you know, thank God for us that, I think Arnold's a decent guy. He came out and said, oh my God, it made him cringe when he read the comments in the paper the next day. And he apologized, and he also said, he would be very upset if he heard his kids making those kind of comments. So I think he, reached out to the communities and apologized and just, said he didn't really, it wasn't anything that was meant to be negative. And this guy, George Allen, down in Virginia, who's calling one of the staff members of Indian descent Makaka, which is, a derogatory word, which, basically calls somebody a monkey. And then he got his foot in his mouth, and it's been dogging him now for a couple of months. And he said he didn't know he made up the word. Well, you just don't make up a word like macaca because apparently people knew what it meant. So again, you have to, these guys have to watch what they're saying, But on the other hand, not so much Arnold because he was born in another country, so anything that he knows about race, he learned when he got here. But George Allen, I mean, this guy grew up in the South, and they said at one point when he was a youth, he chopped off a deer head and stuffed it in some black people's mailbox. So, he's got some issues, some racial issues that have to be dealt with. And it might be good it's being brought out now because you will know truly who this guy is. So, I'm glad Arnold was a bigger man and he decided to apologize and not make excuses for what he said, versus what Governor George Allen in Virginia has done. So kudos to Arnold. We still love you, even though you made a mistake. But at least he recognized it, admitted it, and apologized. Oh, now check this out. I was also watching that Oprah's got her new XM satellite show, which just aired last night. And one of the friends that Oprah has is Dr. Maya Angelou. I just think that is so wonderful that she will have a voice on XM satellite and that people will be able to hear her because she's got a great voice, her words are great, she has great wisdom, so it will just be refreshing that on XM Satellite they're going to have somebody that has some substance that will probably have great conversation and dialogue with calling people that call in, and she'll be able to share some of the great wisdom that she has. So that's very exciting, and kudos to Oprah for bringing someone like Maya Angelou onto the airwaves so we can hear something with substance and something good. I think that's really, really neat. Now, let me just talk a little bit about some nonprofit information because I think it's very important if you're a nonprofit organization listening to the podcast. There's a new trend that's going on now in the corporate community. And what's happening is it would behoove nonprofits, if they can, to find corporations that have the same kind of mission or the same kind of interest and start developing a relationship with that corporation, because not only might you get some funding, but you're also going to get the benefit of working with corporation. You'll get capacity development issues. You might get marketing support. You might get advertising. You'll just get some things that you wouldn't get if you did not partner with them. And a lot of corporations are looking for nonprofits to align themselves with. Corporate giving is big bucks, like some $13.7 billion was given out in 2005, which is up 22%, and that reflects all of the disasters, corporate giving that happened with the disasters, Katrina, the tsunami, the hurricane, and the other hurricane that came after Katrina down in the Texas area. Health and Human Services get a lot of money, and more international causes are getting more funding too. Pharmaceutical firms are gave away $8 billion in the U.S. and abroad. Merck was the biggest corporate donor in 2003 and 2004 when it gave $58 million in cash and $921 million in products. I mean, that is just mind-boggling. And the trend that's going on with corporations is they're moving away from just simply responding to disasters, but looking into developing strategies, structures, and processes so that they are able to react to meet expectations of their stakeholders. So they're just not going to just, when disasters hit, run out anymore. I mean, they're going to make donations, but they're really going to look at what's in it for their stakeholders to determine how much they get involved. So I think that's a very interesting wrinkle as they look at how they're going to spend their money. Another trend is that some corporations are now creating community involvement departments where they're actively seeking out nonprofits to partner with. And as I said before, if you're lucky enough to partner with a corporation, you're going to have some good benefits for your nonprofit that you might not normally have. So it's very important that you look at your brand as a nonprofit, look at some corporations that might have a similar brand, and start figuring out a way to develop some kind of relationship and conversation with that corporation. Because you never know what can happen. It can be a win-win for both. So I just say, do your research, start in your respective community in your neighborhood, and see what companies might have an interest in partnering with you and your mission with your nonprofit. So don't let those opportunities slide by. It's the new trend, and smart nonprofits are taking advantage of that new trend. Well, I think I've bent your ear for quite enough on this podcast. I thank you for tuning in. Continue to pass the podcast around, and we will continue to grow and grow and grow and take over the podcast world. So anyway, have a great week, and go out and make someone else's life a little bit better. And I'll be back with you in a few days. Digital Sister, signing out.
See, I'm in love with you, I'm in love with you, I'm in love with you. Yes, you can mess with me.